everybody. My name is Jake McGrail, and alongside me is Mike Liu of CITR Sports, broadcasting live from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the unceded grounds of the Musqueam people. You're listening to Thunderbird Eye on CITR 101.9. Always keep you up to date with the latest UBC Thunderbirds news and stories. It's been a little over a month since we were last on the air, and over that time, the Thunderbirds' spring seasons have ended. That includes baseball and softball playoffs, as well as the conference and national championships for track and field and golf. There were plenty of highs, some lows, and yes, some banners as well. A few weeks back, I was also able to sit down and interview Shania Ramandaban, the captain of the women's golf team. That was before they took part in both the conference, or both the Nationals and the Canadian University Golf Championships. And that was a great interview. We'll play that later in the show. But first, we're going to start with softball.
And yeah, speaking of, the softball season ended in early May as the Thunderbirds unfortunately fell short of the Cascade Collegiate Conference. Yes, playoffs. Before that, the regular season series against Warner Pacific was canceled due to Warner being unable to make the trip to Vancouver.
Yeah, I looked this up. I could not see any explanation as to why they couldn't make it, but they just had to forfeit all the games for some reason.
Maybe COVID? We know how the border has been, like, finicky, even with NHL playoffs, so.
Who knows? But that did mean 3 forfeit victories for UBC to finish the season on a high note,
Hey, not bad.
They did end the season with a conference record of 18-12, which was good for 5th in the standings. They then headed to Klamath Falls, Oregon for a double elimination postseason tournament, where you're not out until you have lost 2 games.
Klamath Falls is basically in California, so I mean, hey, it's a California road trip.
California,
Something like that. First up was the College of Idaho, where UBC blew an early lead to lose 5-4. They jumped ahead 5-1 in the first 2 innings, with Mia Valk and Nicole Salas hitting RBI doubles in the first before an RBI single from Avery Hilpert and another RBI double for Valk in the second.
Yeah, however, the Yotes then hit a 2-run home run in the third and a 3-run home run in the fifth. They scored all their runs off of homers in this game. And then Idaho's relief pitcher Hannah McNerney was lights out, giving up just 2 hits and no runs in over 5 innings of work.
And that meant it was a do-or-die game against Southern Oregon. And UBC pulled out a big 10-2 win. They got off to a slow start, going down 2-0 early, but exploded for 6 runs in the fifth and another 3 in the sixth to mercy rule their opponents.
Yeah, Valk was again a star. She had 4 RBIs and 2 runs scored, including a home run in the sixth that ended the game. Does it count as a walk-off home run if it leads to a mercy rule and not like...
Can we count it as a walk-off?
I mean, it was the last play of the game, so...
Technically, it's right.
Technically a walk-off. 8 different Thunderbirds scored, with Hilpert, the other who came across multiple times. Shelby Kemple pitched a complete game on the mound.
And later that day, talk about getting no rest, they rematched against Idaho, and this time it was a blowout in the wrong direction. And as UBC ended their season with a pretty miserable 9-1 loss, the Yotes shelled them for 11 hits in just 5 innings, scoring in each of the first 5. UBC got 1 run off of a Gabriel Dorval sacrifice fly, but they just managed 2 hits all game.
Yeah, that's not a great way for the season to end. Even though overall a solid season for the Thunderbirds, Mia Valk was named first team All-CCC as she hit .354 and led the team with 3 homers, 7 doubles, and 11 stolen bases. Emma Dorval was named second team All-CCC as she hit .345 and had 15 RBIs. And UBC won the Les Schwab Team Sportsmanship Award.
So it's not all things gloom.
Not all things doom and gloom.
And finally, just yesterday, head coach Gord Collings announced his retirement. He led the program for the last 10 years, during which time UBC moved to the CCC and, of course, now have their own field on campus instead of heading to Softball City in South Surrey.
Quite a step up.
Quite a step up, considering that the drive would be like almost 2 hours on any given day. Collings is a UBC grad himself, having received a Bachelor of Arts in Science BA in Science in 1975 and a Master's in Education in 1985. And let's move on to another bat and ball sport, baseball.
And we got a lot of baseball to talk about.
There is
so much
a lot.
Baseball happened over the last month.
We may as well call this the baseball show. Jeez. Well, it was a memorable close to the comeback season for the UBC baseball team after basically 3 years away from competition. The team was able to sweep their last series in the regular season, setting the stage for an entertaining run in the postseason.
Before the postseason, the T-Brutes took to their home field against the Oregon Tech Owls, and it was not guaranteed that they would be in the playoffs heading into the season back at the very end of April, start of May, because they needed at least a series split to guarantee themselves a spot in the NAIA Conference Championship. With a doubleheader set for Saturday, the Birds did what they needed to do before the series was halfway done, taking both games with a 3-2 and 3-1 scoreline.
It was the visitors who managed to strike first in the fourth inning with an Ian Peters ribby single driving in a run. However, the very next inning, Mike Fitzsimmons sent a towering run into the street, his second one of the year, to knot the game up at one apiece.
Yeah, Oregon then went up 2-1 in the seventh, but Brett Corbeth then connected perfectly on a ball to center field to bring both runners home in the eighth for a 3-2 scoreline. Vicarte Domingo would secure a save to close out the first game of the day.
In the second game, Noah Orr's two-run shot would set the tone in the first inning. As the Thunderbirds would hold that lead all the way to the end of the game, Corbeth, staying hot, tacked on a solo shot in the fifth to secure the 3-1 win.
And there was then another doubleheader on Sunday to close the regular season. Much more scoring, a higher scoring affair that day. UBC took a 7-4 and 9-6 pair of wins to sweep the Owls, and just putting the exclamation mark on the series that, as we mentioned, they only needed two wins, you get four.
May as well.
Oregon Tech did get off to fast starts in both the games, but the T-Birds always found a way to rally and secure the wins.
Yeah, Corbeth, once again, I mean, talk about a bat getting hot at the right time. He knocked in the tying run in the first game with an RBI single, while Ty Penner and Johnny McGill drove in runs with singles themselves.
Unfortunately, Corbeth did suffer a bit in the second game, not with his bat, but on the mound as a pitcher. He found himself and his teammates down in a 3-0 hole, and by the third inning, they were down 6-1. However, they steadily chipped away, rallying again before another Fitzsimmons drive put the Thunderbirds up 9-6 in the seventh.
With the series win under their belts, the Thunderbirds headed down to Lewiston, Idaho for the NAIA Conference Championships. In their first match on May 9th, they took on the College of Idaho Yotes on the men's side.
Yeah, and the Thunderbirds, they showed no signs of fatigue with their travel as they launched in the first inning. Mike Fitzsimmons walked, Ty Penner connected on a single before Noah Orr drew the inning's second walk to load the bases right at the beginning of the game. Nathan Shute then tacked on an RBI single before Brandon Hoop brought two more runs home with the single himself. And then with two outs, still in the same inning, Trent Lenihan stepped up to the plate and launched a two-run homer to give them an immediate 5-0 lead.
And Ryan Beidel had himself a day on the mound for the Birds with five innings of work and seven strikeouts to go. Lenihan and Nolan Weger drove in back-to-back runs in the third, and Lenihan added yet another RBI single in the seventh to stretch the lead to 9-2.
And it wasn't even over for Lenihan, who rounded out the scoring with another RBI single, his fifth run driven in on the day to finish the game 10-3. And with Graham Seltzer closing out the win, the Thunderbirds moved on to face the mighty Lewis Clark State College Warriors, who are always the boogeyman for the Thunderbirds baseball team.
They're the number five team in the NAIA, so, I mean, it's always tough. Though Brandon Hoop got UBC off to a fast start with an RBI double in the first inning, Sam Linscott's RBI single in the top of the fifth gave LC State a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, Thunderbirds would rally in the next inning, managing to go up 3-2 thanks to errors and hits from Shute and Weger. That would unfortunately be all the scoring for them, however, as the Warriors finally figured out UBC pitcher Shane LaForest with a heartbreaking 3-run homer before adding one more run to finish the game 6-3. But thankfully, like the softball, it's not a single elimination postseason tournament.
In the double elimination game, the Thunderbirds had a rematch against the Yotes. It appeared like the dream run was over as Idaho, they went up 8-0 by the top of the third.
Yeah, you're down 8-0, 3 innings into the game. You know that if you lose, your season is done. No NAIA championships for you, but UBC, they didn't go down easy. The Rocky music was playing down in the dugout. Nolan Weger, he started things off, solo home run. Fitzsimmons hit a one-out double with a throwing error bringing him home. Hoop then connected on a double to bring home two more runs, and just like that, The lead was cut in half.
The Idaho managed to score their ninth run on a sac fly the very next inning, but UBC would steadily chip away again. A walk, a single, and a hit by pitch loaded the bases in the seventh before a wild pitch sent another run in. Johnny McGill then ripped an RBI single, followed by a second wild pitch to score another run. To cap off the five-run inning, Fitzsimmons pushed a single to center to score two more runs and take the lead 10-9.
Just like that. 8-0 down, 10-9 lead. They weren't even done. They scored two more runs for insurance in the eighth inning, and UBC, they won 12-9 in a super dramatic game that booked their spot at the NAIA Baseball Championships. Before then, however, they did have to play the LC State Warriors once again in the conference finals game, where the T-Birds dropped a high-scoring thriller 15-7.
Yeah, UBC, unlike previous games, they went up early 2-0 thanks to Hoop's RBI double, but the Warriors' explosive offense gave them an 11-2 lead by the end of the third. Granted, keep in mind with these high scores, and, you know, we were talking about all of this, they didn't get much rest between any of these games. It was one back-to-back-to-back. And
the pitchers are dying out here.
Yeah, like, to begin with, it was already a rough season for them. But anyways, they wouldn't look back from that one. But as the hosts, since Lewis and Clark State were the hosts, they were granted automatic qualification.
The hosts of the NAIA Baseball Championships, not the conference championships.
Yeah, the opening round. They got automatic qualifications. So that meant that the UBC Thunderbirds now had a date in the Baseball Championships the week after in the same city.
Yep, the Thunderbirds, they faced off against the St. Catherine Firebirds in their opening match and absolutely torched them. Shane LaForest went 7 strong innings, allowing 7 hits, but just 2 runs while striking out 5 St. Catherine batters, as UBC kept scoring before an 8-run explosion in the bottom of the 7th.
Yeah, Noah Orr, Ty Penner, Brett Corbeth, Trent Lenihan. This is all players that we've been just talking about getting caught at the right time. And the CCC Conference Player of the Week, Brandon Hoop. He led the hit parade for the T-Birds all day, registering two hits in the contest. Penner had two RBI to show for the day at the plate. With the 15-2 win, the Thunderbirds had another date. Yet another date.
Had to play them again.
With the Warriors.
Instant classic. This was the third match of the month against LC State in the playoffs. The Warriors managed 5 runs in the first inning and another in the second. The two teams battled back and forth. It all looked over after 5 innings, however, with the Warriors leading 8-3.
But as we have come to expect from this UBC team, they clawed their way back. They managed to score 3 runs in the eighth to pull within 2 runs, agonizingly close at 9-7. Unfortunately, at the top of the ninth, they were shut out, and they wouldn't get the chance to complete the comeback. It sealed yet another loss at the hands of these Warriors.
Yeah, but again, double elimination. You got to lose 2 games before they can get you out of here. So fighting for their playoff lives against the Vanguard Lions, another great name.
Oh, my God.
The T-Birds delivered an excellent performance. They were already up 3-1 in the top of the second when Noah Orr hammered a 3-run homer to help the T-Birds to that big early lead. They would not relinquish, holding steady for a 7-4 win.
And starting pitcher Brandon Woods, who has been excellent all year, he improved to a perfect 5-0 on the season, going 7 innings. I mean, talk about a reliable pitcher in a season where pitching has been very, very hard to come by.
And after they then had another strong win against the Doane University Tigers, that one was 9-3, UBC, they played the LC State Warriors again. The 8th time of the season, the 4th time of the playoffs. Except this time, they managed to steal one at the death against the hosts of the tournament.
Down 4-2 at the top of the 8th, Cam Sanderson got the rally started with a 2-run RBI double, tying the game. Sanderson scored himself on a Mike Fitzsimmons sack fly on what turned out to be the game's winning run. LC's struggles continued later in the frame when, with 2 outs, Ty Penner was intentionally walked, bringing Hoop to the plate. Big mistake already. He got himself on base with a walk to load the bases. Nathan Shoot then came through with a base hit, plating 2 more runs to give UBC the 7-4 lead.
And with this win, UBC, they were now 1 win away from making it to their first NAIA World Series since 2006. The team they had to play? The Lewis Clark State Warriors. They had to play them again. The 5th time of the playoffs. And it looked like they might have a shot at making the World Series because they got off to a fast 3-0 start with Brett Corbett driving in a 2-run single.
Yeah, that's where the glass slipper fell off. the Warriors would score the next 6 runs of the game, and the game would finish 6-3 for the LC State Warriors. The heartbreaking loss meant that LC State, they would go on to the World Series, and the T-Birds, they would be heading home.
At the final game of the, what is it, the NAIA Baseball
Championships? Opening round.
Opening round.
That's what they called it.
So it's like a regional championship. Yeah, you go from the conference to the region to the Nationals, double elimination. It's all a big wild tournament at the in the baseball. Definitely a season to remember, especially that crazy month of May with all these big comeback wins and great performances.
There were so many times where it was just like, oh my god, the baseball team's really gonna just get knocked out here, aren't they? And then, oh wait, what? They scored 8 runs in one inning.
That Idaho comeback, legendary stuff right there.
That was so good.
Yeah, so coming 1 win away from the World Series after nearly 3 years away from competition, nothing to sneeze at. Hopefully next season, maybe they can improve. Hopefully the pitching staff is healthier.
Yes, stay healthy. Stay healthy and get more talent, something like that.
And now, after all that baseball, we're moving on to track and field. In May, the Thunderbirds competed at both the CCC and the NAIA Track and Field Championships. Before that, they had a couple more smaller meets for their final tune-ups before the big tournament.
Yeah, and on the weekend of May 6th and May 7th, Thunderbird athletes took part in the Oregon and Portland Twilight Meets in Eugene and Portland, respectively. Rowan Hamilton, remember the name, continued his incredible season, breaking the Canadian U23 record in the hammer throw at 75.98 meters, which is insane.
You're going to be seeing this guy at the Olympics.
There's no way.
Soon.
Yeah. There's no
he
way
will be there. The other UBC stars at the meet included Jenna Melanson, who set a new NAIA season best time in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, 10 minutes and 11 seconds. And Glenna Sim, who also recorded the number one ranked NAIA time this season in the 5,000-meter race at 15:39.
Glenna Sim, the former Arizona State Sun Devil.
The women's 4x800 relay team of Amelia Full, Abby Yipakala, Rachel Mortimer, and Holly McGillivray also dominated their race.
Next, it was time for the CCC Championships in Ashland, Oregon, where the women's team absolutely dominated. They amassed 222 team points, 74 ahead of second place. After they won, they had 148 points, and second place had 67.
You know what that tells me? They disappointed on the second day.
Oh my god.
that lead, it shrunk.
There's only so much I could do, okay?
Yeah, yeah. In all seriousness, no, there were so many great Thunderbirds performers at this event. UBC, they swept the podium in the women's long jump through Emma Rastad, Allison McDonald, and Rebecca Dutchak. And they had the top 4 finishers in the women's 1,500-meter race with Katie Newlove, Mortimer, Kyla Becker, and Yipakala. McDonald then won the triple jump event the next day.
Melanson broke the meet record with the 3,000-meter steeplechase at 10:20, while Jamie Hennessy came third in that event. Other gold medalists included Sage Stoika K in the women's pole vault, and Hasif Fashina Bombada in the 100-meter hurdles.
The ace on the women's side, however, was Catherine Lucas, who was named the female athlete of the meet as she won the 400-meter race on day one, and then on day two won both the 100-meter and 200-meter races, breaking the meet record in the latter with a time of 24.28 seconds.
The men's team, they were unable to quite reach the same heights, but they finished third, still on the podium. Hamilton continued to strut his stuff in the hammer throw, earning a 75.88 meter score, breaking the meet record by 11 meters and finishing 22 meters ahead of second place.
22 meters!
I mean, that's just unheard of.
Imagine being the person who scores, what is that, 53 meters? And you're like, you're feeling real good about that. You know that's a strong time. You look at the leaderboard, you see some dude
from Canada, nonetheless,
some dude from Canada has 75 meters on the scoreboard.
Oh man.
Yeah. Other gold medalists on the men's side were Cameron Kusiak in the javelin and Dylan Ulrich in the steeplechase, who finished ahead of teammate Aiden Miller, who was third in that race.
All right, and otherwise, there was a lot of silver medal for UBC athletes. They included Theo Benedet, a football athlete as well, in shot put, Jason Soriano, also a football, in long jump, Tyler Dozy in the 1,500-meter race, Chase Hagensen in the 200-meter and 400-meter races, and Ryan Goudron in the 800-meter race. Goudron was just 45 hundredths of a second ahead of teammate Paul Fisher.
And look, shout out to the dual sport athletes getting medals in the CCC championships in track and field while also being members of the UBC football team the other half of the year. Very, very impressive.
Very nuts. The athleticism's off the charts.
Jason Soriano's a rookie as well,
yes.
Isn't he?
Yes. This was his first. I think it's Theo's first competitive season as well. So.
And then finally, the track and field season finished in Gulf Shores, Alabama at the NAIA Championships from May 25th to 27th, just a couple of weeks ago. And just like the conference championships, the men earned bronze while the women got gold after there were thunderstorm delays postponing some of the early events on day one.
They really brought the thunder along with them. Starting with the men's team this time, the one man who was able to medal the first day before the delays, take a guess.
there's no one I could think of that would be a good bet to medal.
Rowan Hamilton broke the meet record with a hammer throw at 74.21 meters, comfortably earning himself gold.
I will say that's like 4 or 5 meters shorter than his previous couple of times. He's slipping.
You know what? You can't expect optimal performance from this man all the time.
Thunderbirds, they took the overall points lead on the men's side on day two, although that was because the vast majority of the medal events were on the last day. There weren't a ton handed out in the first couple. The early lead was thanks to Hamilton as well as Tyler Wilson, who earned a bronze in the race walk.
It was a very tight battle in day three, with UBC ending up with 39 team points, 13 back of first place Life University.
I looked up Life University.
I think that's a chiropractic.
It's a chiropractic university.
In LA, I think. Jeez. Let's talk about a small...
A lot of athletic chiropractors,
apparently. Oh, my God. The top performer on the final day was Dozy, who won the 5,000-meter race by 9 seconds, running the final lap in just under 61 seconds. Ulrich pulled out a bronze in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, just 2.5 seconds back of first, to help UBC win bronze as a team.
And as was the case at the conference championships, the women's team dominated, earning 138 points, 44 ahead of second place. Haley Kerr was the first Thunderbird to win gold in the javelin, with Giovanna James finishing third in the same event.
UBC dominated the women's race walk with four top finishers. Olivia Lundman won gold, with Joanne Liu second. Cassidy Cardle came third, and Joanna Yu came fourth.
Other golds were Melanson in the steeplechase, the team of Foal, Yipikala, Mortimer, and McGillivray in the 4x800-meter relay, and Sim in the 5,000-meter race. And Sim, in that 5K, finished 16 seconds ahead of second place.
The team of Fashina Bambada, Lucas, Kayla Smith, and Hannah Sobkowicz, they medaled in both the 4x100 meters and the 4x400 meters relays on day three, finishing third and second. Lucas wasn't done there, as she competed in two more races on the same day, winning bronze in the 100-meter sprint and finishing fifth in a 200-meter sprint.
Doing four races on the same day, all of them finals.
Hey, shout out to the whatever recovery that they were doing.
Apparently the time between the second relay and the 100-meter sprint was about an hour.
No way.
And she medaled in both of them.
That's insane.
Yeah, that was also her final meet as a Thunderbird, as she is a senior. So way to go out in a blaze of glory right there.
Leave it all on the track, right?
Yeah. And then finally, McGillivray won silver in the 1,500-meter race, and Kyla Becker was third in the 10,000-meter race. And as you'd expect, given the big margins the women's team were winning by and the men's team also medaling, head coach Laurier Primo was named coach of the year.
Yeah, and I just want to go back a bit to Rowan Hamilton and the throws team. Hey, keep an eye on them. Next year, they have a very interesting recruit, Matthew Uliana, coming in from St. George's School, just over by near campus. He is the U18 Canadian world record holder in the hammer throw.
Oh, no. We're good.
His hammer throw, And his age group is 74 meters. So we're going to have a very...
It's going to be some competition here on campus between the two of them. I'm picturing a lot of first and second finishes at all of these track and field meets.
I mean, it'll be fun to watch, especially if you're ever out there checking out a T-Bird track meet.
And for now, we're going to take a break for ads and PSAs. Once we come back, we'll play the interview that I did with Shania Remandaban and then talk about our golf teams.
About 40% of UBC students experience food insecurity. Sprouts is hosting a weekly produce market from 10:30 to 1:30 every Monday in the Life Building. With produce from local farms, students are free to take whatever they want. Sprouts Cafe is open from Monday to Thursday and is offering 30 free meals a day, completely free and no questions asked. They also host Community Eats, a completely free hot lunch that is open for all. Stop by and support the Sprouts cause for sustainable, accessible food at UBC.
Tribe Called Red is the Hallucination, with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Thunderbird Eye here on CITR 101.9. And now I'm going to play the interview we talked about earlier, where I was able to sit down with Shania Remandaban, the captain of the dominant UBC women's golf team. This interview was recorded before both the NAIA and the Canadian University Championships. So you'll hear reference to a tournament that I said they played most recently. That was all the way back at the end of April. That was their third last tournament of the season, their first postseason tournament. But it offers a nice view as to her mindset going into her final two tournaments as a member of the Thunderbirds. Here is that interview. Unfortunately, we seem to be having some technical difficulties at the moment, so we're just going to take another quick ad break while we sort that out.
A Tribe Called Red is the Hallucination, with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
You got five.
Hello,
Thunderbirds.
My name is Jake Grail.
Joining the standings, and you
today
mentioned
is one of the stars of the star-studded UBC women's golf team, Shania Remandaban. Thank you for coming on the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Start us off. Your most recent tournament was at the end of April at the CCC Championships in Eagle Point, Oregon, where UBC dominated, winning by 45 strokes in the two-day event. How did it feel competing for that banner once again after a couple years hiatus and managing to get another win there?
Honestly, the last, I'd say 2.5 years of my time on the team, has really been a dumpster fire. So the fact that we got over there and we were able to compete, and not only compete but dominate, it was fabulous.
And you were doing quite well in the first day of the tournament. I believe you were the day one leader on the individual standings, although it was your teammate Elizabeth Labbe who eventually got the individual title. How did you feel about your own personal performance there?
First day I did have the lead, but the fact of the matter is on our team it's 9 really, really good players. So the fact that I didn't walk away with the title, even though I was leading, it's not surprising because it's just such a tough field on our team. And I think if you even look at the leaderboard, the 5 of us that competed were pretty much 1 through 5 or 6. So yeah, the fact that, I mean, it was always going to be a T-Bird that came away with the individual title, but it was just a matter of which T-Bird. So I'm really, really happy for her. She's having a great year this year.
Yeah, there's been a lot of tournaments where it's like 1 through 5 or 1 through 6, 1 through 7. You got 5 Thunderbirds up there in the standings, and you mentioned there's 9 of you out there. So when it comes to the scoring of the tournaments, you only have 5 players on the leaderboard.
Yep.
So is that predetermined before the tournament starts? Is this 5 are going to be the ones that have their scores counted, or is it all of you competing and then the top 5 are the ones that are counted?
So we have 9 players on our roster, and every event will take 5 and you count 4 scores. And the way that we kind of determine our traveling squad is through like an inter-team qualifier. So we'll play 2 or 3 rounds just amongst ourselves, and then the low 5 will be going to the tournament. So it's a battle to even get there. So
how competitive are those practices, those inter-squad tournaments?
I'd say to consistently be traveling, you're probably around shooting par, couple under, couple over consistently.
And is it a good attitude within the camp, or like win or lose?
Yeah, it was really interesting this year because we have, out of the 9 women on the team, 7 of them are rookies. So I was going into this year not sure how they would buy into the team culture, because historically the team has always been super competitive and super super good at golf, I guess. But this year I was really impressed with the girls. If you were winning, then you were winning and you were humble about it. But if you weren't winning, if you weren't qualifying, you knew what you had to do to kind of get into that next event. So in that way, we really did an excellent job of pushing ourselves to be better without putting others down.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up a little bit later. So like very, very fitting that you brought it up yourself, but your teammate Esther Lee, besides yourself, is the only player on the team that had a regular quote unquote conference season before the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. So as one of the 2 senior figures on this team, do you feel that you've been a leader on the team this season?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been the captain of the team formally for 3 years. The title actually came on to me. I didn't really expect it, but I guess Chris, our head coach Chris, thought that I would fit the job. But I think I've really played a leadership role on the team, in that if any of the younger players have questions about the regular season, which, yeah, none of them have had, they've come to me, and usually I can give them a pretty good answer. But now that we're going into nationals, it's almost like new for everyone. I've only played nationals 2 just because of the timing of the pandemic. But then again, like every athlete, every college athlete only gets it 4 times. So I'll help them as much as I can, but we're all kind of trying to win this banner for the first time as with this team, with this particular team.
And it's been a very good season for the team this year, but even going back a few years, you mentioned it's been a bit of a dumpster fire with the pandemic really messing everything up. But just looking at the on the field specifically, in 2017, 2018, your first year at UBC, the women's golf team won 5 of the 11 tournaments that you played in, which is a pretty good record. But then since then, you guys have won 30 of the last 36 tournaments since the fall of 2018. What do you think has led to this incredible run on the course over the last few years?
I think I think there's a couple of things. Let me think back. Let me really dig deep. I think, first of all, our coach has done a really, really excellent job of recruiting new players. I know that he really tries hard to not only pick someone who can golf and who can post scores, but someone who will really fit into the team. And at the end of the day, if you're fitting into the team and you're playing for your teammates and you're not discouraged by losing against the same teammates, that really helps in rolling the ball forward with continuous wins like we have been doing. Second thing that's really changed is we have a lot more access to like really good practice facilities. Like we practice at one of the nicest golf facilities in pretty much Western Canada, and they let us come and go whenever we want. So as long as we can make time in our schedule, we're practicing in paradise, I guess.
Is that here on campus?
No, it's just, I'd say like a 6-7 minute drive. It's called Shaughnessy Golf and Country Club. Yeah. And then it's a lot of hard work and we know it's hard work, but it's really just been really good players coming through the program, just winning events and just wanting to play for the team, wanting to win. And I think that might be the difference there.
And this season has arguably been your best yet in your time here at UBC, is despite the relative inexperience of the roster, the squad has won all 10 tournaments that you've competed in so far this school year, a lot of them by big margins. Back in the fall, at the beginning of the season, did you think that you guys would be this good?
I'd say yeah. I knew that we would be good. I obviously didn't really have a good handle on the teams that we would be competing against just because we haven't seen them in a couple years. We predominantly compete in the United States, and we just haven't just been in the States for a couple of years. But seeing the quality of golf, like I knew the recruits before they came, and I looked at kind of their stats before they were on the team, and I knew that we were going to be a good team. But I just didn't know how competitive the U.S. side would be, because they've had competitive golf throughout the pandemic. It never really was taken away from them like it was taken away from us. But we came, and we've been dominating since September, and they don't like us very much over there.
These guys again coming from Canada.
Yeah. But we're there and we're sweeping. So I did expect us to be a good team, but I didn't expect us to be like untouchable, if I'm being honest.
And how much are you interacting with these other teams when you're at the tournaments? And is there a difference with that with before and after COVID?
In a game of golf, it's probably 5 hours of just you and the other people that you're playing with. So there's quite a bit of interaction. You can choose not to talk to them, but that makes for a really tough 4 or 5 hours. So we are actually pretty good friends with most of the teams there. That being said, we were really quite a new addition to the Cascade Conference. So I guess the former number one team, they're no longer the number one team in the conference. So us coming in kind of sweeping like we do is met with a little of apprehension and a little more competitiveness, but it's never been upsetting. It's never been overly competitive. Everyone is trying to beat us, like genuinely trying to beat us, but we just aren't letting them. I think maybe just the margins that we've been winning by this season, they have gotten a little discouraged on their end, but it's always good conversation with them when we do get paired up with some pretty decent teams down there.
And with the success that you've had this season, what are your expectations going into each event, especially now that you're into the postseason tournaments? Is it first place or bust every time?
So I would split kind of our season, because we do have a really long season. We run September till pretty much June. I'd say you could split the season into three sections. So we have the first section would be September to October, November, and that would be the fall season. And yeah, we would pretty much expect to win every event there. And then we'll split it into the spring season, which will run February to around March. And again, we would expect to win every event there. But then what we're kind of entering into now is, I would call, like, playoffs or championship season, is where we'll start seeing teams that we've never seen before. And they're good teams, even though in the NAIA, which is where we compete, we're ranked as the third seed. So, and even with our incredible, like, 10-0 season, we're only third. So it's exciting to kind of come into a tournament where we're not going to be leading by 30 after one day. But also the younger players on the team, they've never seen that. So I'm excited to see how an uncomfortable lead, or even having to chase a lead, which we've never had to do ever with this team, how the younger players will rise to that challenge. So I'm not actually expecting anything from, in terms of, like, a place for our next tournament. I'm really expecting just good focus and good golf and a positive experience for everyone. I'm hopeful to win. I think we have a fighting chance to win, but I don't have really any expectations because we're just not familiar with the quality of golf of the other teams.
And when you're preparing for a national championship tournament, I feel like that's something that might be easier to make sure that you get up for and that you're fully locked in on. For some of the tournaments early in the year, if you're thinking, oh, we expect to win this tournament, how do you make sure that everyone stays locked in and doesn't coast on that previous success?
I think a big reason why because I know we didn't coast at all in the fall or the spring, is because to even get to the event, you have to beat half of your team. And our team in our conference ranks, there's 9 of us and we rank 1 through 9. So to even get a chance at cracking the travel squad, you have to beat out your other players. And if you're not grinding, if you're not practicing, if you're coasting, you're probably going to sit out that event.
And is nationals going to be, again, another 5-person thing you have to compete against each other for, or are all of you going to be taking part in that?
So for nationals, our coaches actually pick the roster based on a season-long review of how you've played, how you've interacted with the team, and how you've grown. So we're taking 6 girls based on a season-long decision.
And I assume that as the captain, you're going to be a part of that?
Yes, I'll be there. I'm really excited to be there. We're leaving on Thursday.
And the UBC graduation ceremonies, they've been taking part during May. As you said, you're leaving on Thursday. The national championship tournament is in Oklahoma City from the 24th to the 27th. Are you going to be missing your graduation ceremony?
Yeah, so I'm actually ceremony 9, which is the morning of our last day. I honestly would rather be playing. I'd rather be playing with the team for a couple of reasons. One, I love this team, and I think that this team in particular this year, we have a good group of girls and we have a fighting chance at it. And an NAIA banner isn't something that every group of girls comes across. Like, we won it in 2019 and they hadn't won it for a couple generations before us. So it is really special to even have a fighting chance at it. And second of all, I would rather not sit through a 3.5-hour ceremony to hear my name called once.
Better things to be doing.
Yeah. And they're definitely going to mispronounce it. So.
Now, as a graduating senior, you were named a finalist for the May Brown Award at the UBC Big Block Ceremony. It was won by Emily Moore of women's soccer. And how did it feel to receive that recognition as one of the final nominees for UBC's top graduating female athlete?
It was awesome. The name's up there, Emily Moore. She's so good. She's such a good player. I have watched a couple of other games of their games, and she's incredible. And another name that was up there was Maddie Gould, and she's been a T-Bird for, I want to say, 7 years, which is, that's incredible. Like, 7 years of a contact sport in college is crazy. That's awesome that she's still running around and being a good player. So for my name to be up there is obviously an honor. The 5 years that I've been here, they went by too fast, but seeing my name up there was awesome. It was really cool.
And a question that I have about the golf schedule and how athletes manage that. It's an interesting one because there are tournaments that are well past the end of classes for the spring semester. For example, the Golf Canada Canadian University Championship is the first week of June this year. Yeah. So you're graduating now, so you don't have to worry about it as much. But in past years, how did you manage that? Did you take summer classes to stay on campus? Did you come to UBC just for golf during that time? How did you structure your summer?
So I lived pretty much in Vancouver all year round just because it didn't make sense to kind of commute back and forth just to practice. So I committed to living in Vancouver and I paid rent in Vancouver for the better part of 5 years. And you have to make the commitment, I think, because the tournaments that do run past the spring semester are our most important tournaments. And you can choose to move back home, sure, but personally, I would never give up my roster spot for that. I would much rather be on campus fighting for a banner with my team, for sure.
And are the rest of your teammates the same way, like for the most part, staying on campus or at least staying in Vancouver?
Yeah. We're all around Vancouver right now. We're practicing pretty much every day at Shaughnessy, so makes it easier to be around campus.
And is the Golf Canada Canadian University Championship, is that going to be the last tournament that you take part in as a member of the Thunderbirds?
Yep, it will be. It will be. So I'm looking forward to a really good result there. The last time we were there, I had some good golf going for me. So hopefully I can keep it rolling.
And after that, do you have any plans for the near future, either with regards to golf or other areas?
I've been a golfer for a long time. I've had golf in my life to some capacity for, I'd say, 20 years. So I'll be working in the golf industry throughout the summer, and I'll be starting a new degree at BCIT, but I'll still be working part-time at a golf course. Those are my plans.
That's all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything else you'd like to add before I let you go?
No, it's a sunny day today, so I might take advantage and go practice, actually.
Get some extra work in ahead of flying out later this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, good luck to you and the rest of your team at the Nationals. We hope that you are able to bring home another banner. For Shania Romandaban, this has been Jake McGrail of CITR Sports, and have a safe flight later this week.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Once again, that was Shania Romandaban of the UBC Women's Golf Team. Since that interview, both the women's and the men's teams have taken part in a couple of big tournaments, and we'll talk about those now.
They say perfection is impossible, but if you reach for it, you'll attain excellence. It's safe to say that no one shared that platitude with our women's golf team, as, with a win at last week's Canadian University Championship, they have tied a bow on a perfect team season. 12 tournaments, 12 wins. There were a couple individual titles that got away, but nothing takes away from an outstanding team achievement. The men's team, they took the excellence as though they felt short of that astronomical level. They still won 8 of their 12 tournaments. Like, that's pretty good. Including a matching victory at last week's championship. 24-24 across both teams is ridiculous.
The 20 tournament banners between the women's and men's golf teams just this season. And going back to the stat that I said in the Shania interview, for the women's golf team since the fall of 2018, 32 of their last 38 tournaments.
That's insane.
They have won over the last, what is it, like 3.5 years.
Of competition. Like, that's all, you factor in the two COVID years, and wow, that's a
that includes That includes all the championships they've played, so the toughest opposition they've played, everything. Just absolute domination. And since we last took to the airwaves, as mentioned, the UBC teams, they played twice. Both teams were in the Chateau Bromont in Quebec last week for the Canadian University Championships. But before that, during those graduation ceremonies, the men were in Silvis, Illinois, and the women were in Oklahoma City for the NAIA National Championships.
The men played first at the TPC Deer Run, which is a stop on the PGA Golf Tour. They ran into to a middling eighth place finish by their standards. The gang was right in the hunt after rounds one and two, but a disappointing scores on Thursday and Friday left the Birds 33 shots back of the champion Kaiser University Seahawks at plus 27. Aiden Schumer, who finished tied 13th at plus one, was the top individual T-bird.
Yeah, a week later, the women avenged UBC at the Lincoln Park Golf Course in Oklahoma. The competition was fiercer than they've had to face in any other competition this season, as the local hosts, Oklahoma City University Stars, gave the T-birds a real run for their money. It was just a five-shot win, but it was the T-Birds on the good end of that win as they wrapped at 4-under. Sonia Tang's matching 4-under was the top Thunderbird score and good for 6th alone. That is technically back-to-back NAIA National Championship wins for the team, as in they've won both the last two they've played, but they weren't at the one in between. So they're back-to-back in terms of when they're actually able to be at the tournament. And Esther Lee and Shania were man-to-man the only players to be on the roster for both of those two championships.
More recently, at Chateau Bromont, the season concluded in a style with a double-double, as UBC won both team titles and both individual titles. The men were not downtrodden after the disappointing finish in Illinois, as they finished as the only team under par at minus 7, 8 shots clear of the Laval Rouge et Or.
Aiden Schumer, he continued his strong run of form with a gold medal performance, scoring 11 under. He was the only golfer to shoot under par in all four rounds. Russell Howlett was 9th at 2 over. Mackenzie Beckel and Ethan DeGraff tied for 11th at 5 over. And Dylan McDonald was tied for 17th at 7 over.
The women completed their
pièce de résistance,
their magnum opus, their crowning jewel, whatever you want to call it at this tournament. Oh my goodness, they beat the UFV Cascades. All right, 98 shots.
Repeat that, please.
98 shots. They were 5 under to 93 over in second place. 98. Can we just say...
That's not between first and last. That's first and second.
Bask in their eminent glory, everyone.
I'm gonna need to look up what the difference was between first and last place.
All right, I'll continue.
You continue.
Individually, unsurprisingly, the T-Birds finished 1, 2, 3, and 4 with Sonia Tang, Elizabeth Labbe, Shania Ramandaban, Great, and Grace Bell occupying those spots. Their scores were even, +3, +8, and +13. Credit, I suppose, to Sasha Loan, the UDM Carabin that finished as the lowest non-Thunderbird at 16 over. Two shots better than the ever-effective Vike Sukrit Harjai. It's unlikely we'll ever bear witness to a season like this. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah. That's just... 98 shot difference. Okay, we've got the standings.
All right.
It wasn't actually... So the gap between second and sixth... Unfortunately for Corey, it was the Vikes who came in sixth and last place at the tournament. But the difference between second Fraser Valley and sixth Victoria was just 18 strokes. Oof. So that means that UBC, they won the tournament between first and last a distance of 116 strokes.
Absolutely.
Which actually, not as big of a difference as it could have been, but it just shows the second through sixth was... Very much closer together. They were very close to each other. And then UBC was just playing their own tournament.
I mean, they say golf is a lonely sport.
It's lonely at the top. Exactly. As Shania would probably say.
And soon as COVID continues to hopefully dwindle, our teams will return to more out-of-conference tournaments where they will face NCAA competition and the world's ultimate collegiate talent. But until that season comes, soak in the absolute dominance. And hey, if they can continue playing like this, who's to say that we can't win those tournaments like that?
I mean, yeah. Closing a perfect undefeated season with a nearly 100-stroke win at the Canadian Championship.
Oh, my God.
That's a way to start your summer.
Yes. The celebration's on.
And then finally, the last thing before we head out is, all the way back on May 7th, the men's rugby team took on Castaway Wanderers RFC in the BC Premier League Final. They won 48-34, securing a nearly undefeated season and the league championship. So congratulations to them as well. A lot of banners coming through in the last month or so for UBC.
Absolutely. And this is the point of the show where we usually take a little look at what the UBC action has ahead. Unfortunately, there's no varsity sports, at least until August at the very earliest.
Yeah, I think it'll be the end of August. End of August. If the season schedules go back to more of what they were before the pandemic.
Yeah. For now, though, if you want your fix of UBC varsity athletes playing in technically non-varsity sanctioned sports, you have the Varsity FC playing in League 1 BC. They're in action Sunday, June 12th. They're at home at Thunderbird Stadium. They're playing against Rivers FC, which is just another name for TRU's Wolfpack's team. So the men kick off at 1 p.m. PST. Women kick off at 3:30 PST. On the rugby side, UBC athletes are turning out for the Point Grey Thunder in Rugby League BC. They face off against the Vancouver Dragon at the Brockton Oval down in Stanley Park. That happens this Saturday, right? Yeah, this Saturday, the 11th of June. So if you want to catch some more UBC athletes in action, head on over there.
And it's worth mentioning with the soccer, this is a new league, new semi-pro league taking place over the summer. It's not all university athletes.
But it's pretty much all UBC.
But it's mostly the fact, and the Varsity FC teams for both the men's and women's side predominantly UBC athletes, especially a lot of current UBC athletes. So it's a lot of the players that we'll be seeing that we've been talking about over the course of the previous season that will be back here on campus in the fall. So great to see them having this new league to play in over the summer.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a promising initiative. I mean, hopefully it also sets the foundation for a pro league, women's pro league here in Canada, which is something many people have been really prying for recently.
Yeah. And with that, thank you for tuning in to Thunderbird Eye on CITR 101.9. Besides listening to the show, the best way to keep up to date with UBC Thunderbirds news and stories is to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at CITR Sports. Next up on CITR is the All Access Pass. For Thunderbird Eye, this has been Jake McGrail and Mike Liu with contributions from Corey Branson. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great rest of your day.